Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together? Is my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, and welcome back, Stack to Jacks. That's my Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 7. NASDAQ Futures up 54. As we try to come back from yesterday's sell-off, which actually ended up being a little bit bigger than Thursday's increase. So we'll see. Of course, we're coming back a little bit. SP Futures up 6. NASDAQ Futures up 53. Buy the dip. That's what we do. We'll see what happens. The tariffs are an issue as they keep coming back and forth, but evidently they're back on now. So that's what that is. We have Professor Carl.
You do.
So you're gonna stop importing stuff from Myanmar?
Well, first off, we need to have a conversation about the belief in magic.
Magic Johnson?
No, magic. You know, like Voldemort.
Like the guy in the middle of the street with the pebble under the three thingies?
Well, magic. That's not magic. That's a scam.
Yeah.
I think most people know that one, right?
Yeah.
Magic. Elon says that he's forming a new political party because his grift got attenuated by this, this monstrosity that just passed out of Congress.
Oh, that you're ascribing 100% to that. It could be we just might need one.
Well, no, I'm not saying we don't need one. Okay, I'm saying his motives are worse than what came out of the back end of your dog.
Well, I mean, I'm not a massive fan of the dude, right? And he's managed to suck more out of government than just about anybody, except maybe our current president is doing, but that's another issue.
No, actually, he's by several orders of magnitude done worse than our current president. Okay.
Anyway, so, but having said that, I'm no shrink, but he's somewhat on the spectrum.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I'm just it's not to me to diagnose somebody, but. I think he's perfectly capable of separating both of these things. I don't think you and I could be, but he might be.
No.
Well, not totally separating, but it's not the first time somebody did something good because they felt they got hosed.
That's a fair point. However, the fact of the matter is he didn't get hosed. His hosing was...
He thinks he got hosed.
I understand that. His hosing got attenuated. The hosing he gave to you and I.
Yep.
Okay. And oh, by the way, that hosing was involuntary. Now, if somebody volunteers to be hosed, maybe they got some pleasure out of it, and as adults, we're allowed to do that kind of thing, right?
But other electric places got the hosing, too. Got the stuff, too, right? Anybody who did the stuff. As a matter of fact, when Ford...
Okay, now, hold on a minute, Chief. Hold on a minute.
I'm not defending it. I'm just trying to make it straight.
All I'm saying is that the laws of thermodynamics aren't suggestions, okay? And we have an economy.
All right. Before you get into thermodynamics, what he got was a tax. What do you want to call it? Tax credit for buying an electric vehicle, correct? And he was a big electric vehicle person. But other guys who make electric vehicles get it as well, correct?
That's not even close to the entire...
I don't know, but he also gets the carbon credit, which I've been railing about for 8 years with you. I'm with you on this one. I'm saying, but he took advantage of it, ended up with more money than anybody should ever have gotten from government, correct? but other dudes were part of that. And if they could have.
Oh, other people benefited from it. Sure. Sure. I'm not saying he's the only one who got it.
Yeah, he's not a singular slime ball. He's just a
no, he just happens to have essentially all of his money because of this.
Yes.
Okay. So
all the profits in that company. Pretty much.
Not just in that company, but also in Solar City and in all this battery garbage out in California and all this other stuff. Okay.
But
just cars.
I don't want to swing topics on you, but you just tricked something in my feeble brain. You know how hard it is to sell a house if the people have the 20-year repayment plan for the solar on their roof?
Oh, I hope it's impossible.
It's almost impossible.
Well, it should be.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know, Nancy, you've had to go through that a couple times.
Well, yeah.
For those that don't know, I don't know how it is down by you, but up here, if you want to get solar, most people don't pony up to scratch for the solar and then get whatever rebates and stuff they get. They actually get a 20-year plan with somebody that puts it on your roof, and it goes on your mortgage. If the second person buying the place goes, I don't want that crap on my roof, you got a problem.
Well, it's a serious problem. And then the other issues that come along with it are that a lot of people think that this somehow gives you some sort of resilience, and that's how it's sold, which is not true, because there's no flywheel effect with a inverter that has no storage.
Right.
Okay, so those systems cannot black start, meaning that they cannot run without utility power present as a synchronization and a stabilization source. And you can solve that if you have a system that is designed for it by adding storage. The storage is expensive. And oh, by the way, it has a service life and has to be replaced when it wears out. And
storage,
and
you meaning a battery, essentially.
Meaning batteries.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then you also have, in addition to that, you have risk that goes along with that, which is going to impact your insurance costs, because batteries are dangerous, okay, especially in that kind of, you don't think the car battery in your car that starts your car is dangerous, but it kind of is, all right? I mean, every now and then they explode and, spray acid all over the place and things like this. It doesn't happen very often.
Well, it used to be happen a lot.
Well, I mean, it still does happen once in a while.
Well,
okay?
In the old days, if it was out in the cold so long that it froze and you tried to jump it and didn't take the top off and saw it was frozen, that wasn't good.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, it that kind of thing can still happen. But the point is that if it happens inside your house, it's a whole lot. And if it catches on fire inside your house, you're really screwed. So, I mean, there's all kinds of things that go into, engineering something like this. And what I've pointed out for a long time is that just on a thermodynamics basis, and therefore on a cost basis, this entire scheme is a lose. And there are certain circumstances where you put up with it, but I mean, I put a solar panel and a controller and stuff on top of my daughter's van that she, and she lives in part of the year when she's traveling. But that was the last piece. The first piece was a handheld portable generator. Why? Because the generator always works as long as it has gas, okay, and it's in good working order. The solar doesn't work when it rains for 3 days straight. And oh, by the way, your refrigerator has to have power or all your food goes bad.
Oh, yeah.
So, that's the microcosm version of Five Nines reliability, right? In that if you lose your reefer, you lose your food. And so, you have to have storage because you're not plugged in. You're not in a campground all the time. So you have to have storage.
Are you C.W. McCall, cab over Pete with a reefer on?
Well, but that reefer was run on diesel, right?
The
problem here is that the motivation to get all bent out of shape about this lies there. And yet, notice that not one word has come out of Elon's mouth, or anyone else's for that matter, about going after where, simply on the analysis of the MTS, this problem has been for the last 25 years, where it is today, and what's going to destroy the fiscal stability of the United States.
I think he is somewhat pissed off in that this whole thing with the Doge was Trump's idea. Trump is the new Teflon man. Nobody blames him. They blame Musk.
Well, yeah, it you're right about that. Okay.
And Musk's like, what did I get myself into? I didn't get paid.
That's a
Well,
okay, but if he didn't understand that there is a point with, you know, all human systems have some element of corruption in them because humans.
Yeah, well, you need a little something. We'll wet your beak.
Well, we're imperfect beings, okay? Yep. And like it or not, we respond to incentives. And one of the incentives is, well, if I can steal and not get caught and not go to jail, well, okay. You know, a very small percentage of people will not try to find some way to take advantage of that. All right.
I would hope that 90% of the population wouldn't steal because they could. Once we get to that point, I don't think there's hope for us.
Well,
most people don't steal because it's wrong.
Chief, I... okay. Maybe 51% don't steal because it's wrong.
Well, how they define stealing is another issue. People define stealing.
There you go. Yeah. All right. I mean, every single person that is driving a Tesla stole.
Well, they...
No, they stole from you.
They took advantage of a ridiculous.
You paid them when you bought a Suburban.
Right.
Right. They stole money from you.
Yeah. Well, somebody did. They don't think they did.
They got the benefit.
I understand.
Okay. The problem is we won't hold the politicians to account for this. We won't hold Elon to account for this. And oh, by the way. The latest screed, and you've probably seen this one too, is that in this bill is a cap on the federally guaranteed student loan amounts. Did you know that was
yep.
in there?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Do you know what the screaming is now? Is that I have to be able to take out $200,000 worth of student loans in order to go to med school and become a doctor. All right, well, I have news for you. The entire reason that the country's being bankrupted is that it costs $200,000 to become a doctor. Because now, once you do that, if the place that you go to work for says you will stick people full of potentially dangerous and worthless shots or get fired... And you're 200 in the hole.
Well, you don't get to be a doctor anymore.
Well, of course, you're running somebody else's scheme.
Yeah, you're running somebody else. I know people that's happened to. I mean, my particular doctor, she refused to join any group. That's why I'm with her.
But see, so now here's the other thing is that you've talked about this. We've had this conversation before too. You have a friend that, you know, that his thing is, well, you know, my way of managing this to some extent is to, you know, is to do this concierge thing, which is a subscription and therefore a scam.
Well,
excuse me, why is it that when I was growing up and you were growing up, we're both old enough to know this, all right, we got sick, mama showed up. We went to the doctor. Mama took us to the doctor. Mama pulled out the checkbook and wrote a check for $10 or $15 or whatever it was.
Yep.
Okay. And today, you are willing to pay a physician $300 a month, and you haven't been in his building yet.
I'm not saying it's ideal. What I said was...
What I'm saying is it's a scam, and by the way, that doctor should be castrated for doing it.
Well,
now, I understand that he says, well, but that's better than the alternative. That's not the point. The point is he's still profiting from the scam. And
It includes stuff. Right.
Chief, until we as a population are willing to say that's enough of this crap across the board...
I never once said it was perfect. What I said was there's people... I mean, if I were to list... 15 of my closest friends, acquaintances, whatever you call them, I'm going to say 12 don't have a physician.
Yeah, well, I'm one of them.
I'm saying it's, and you walk into one of these hospitals, you're just meat on a board.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you how this gets stopped, okay? when you get people that are, you know, in the back half, okay, we're playing the back nine. I certainly am. What are the odds that I make it to 120, right? So you might.
You're Ron Randolph.
Maybe. Yeah. Devil don't want me, right? But, you know, I'm playing the back nine, right? When we get to the point that people playing the back nine say, you pull this crap, you and your entire genetic line die. Now. By the way, the threat to throw me in jail for it doesn't mean anything. Now think carefully before you act next.
Well, you know, you have this. I don't. You. How we would make this go away?
Well, that's one way.
Well, I know, but it's. it's you're kind of 15 years late to rail on doctors because they don't control anything anymore.
I'm sorry. Yes, they do.
What can they do?
Tell everybody to go piss off, and that would force it to change immediately.
When I had years ago, well, fortunately, I haven't had many issues for a long time, but I had some heart rhythm issues, like seemingly a lot of people are having these days. But I went to see
my. How that happened?
Well, I went to see my guy on a Saturday morning, and he went to give me an EKG. He meets me there, right?
Right.
And he goes, the new machine, he couldn't work. He had to call up this person. He had to put all these codes in there to make sure that it went to the people he was now a group with, so they got charged and they knew what he was doing, instead of him just being able to give me an EKG. He goes, I can't stand this crap. but the billing systems, the insurance, all that stuff, there's no way he can, in his mind, and he hated it. Some of the guys, Audrey knows a guy who's been in business. He's been a doctor. The guy's 64. Finally, he joins one of these groups. They want him to do rounds on a hospital on a weekend. The guy's a GP.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not even his own guy. He's an employee. This is crazy. And they couldn't wait to get him out of there because he actually would prescribe something that they, we don't give that one anymore. We give this one. It's more expensive. And he goes, I've used that for years. It always works. What's the matter with you people?
Well, Chief, you know, when I was a young adult, my family had a GP that, I mean, he was an older Japanese dude that, I mean, he was actually a physician.
Okay. Yeah.
He wasn't somebody's lackey. He was a physician. And he was considerably older than I was because he was a relatively older man when I was a young man, right? So, I mean, you know, we know how this works. The old progression is what it is. But when my mother got on in age, he got to the point that he told her, he says, look, you know, I'm retiring. He says, I don't want to, but I have to. I'm just physically getting to the point that I can't do it anymore. And he says, and by the way, whatever you're going to have after this is going to suck. And I can't do anything about it. And he says, and I won't put up with it. And it's one of the reasons I'm leaving practice.
Yep. Well, somebody, my attorney buddies tell me the same thing. How the hell do you cross-examine somebody you can't look at? When Robin, my dear departed friend, who used to be a contributor to the show, is now not with us anymore, but her brother went to Michael Reese, and they lived together in one of the houses I remodeled on the south side, and he told me, he goes, Tom, you know, a real good GP, guy who's been around a while, because their dad was a GP, he says, first thing is the guy always meets you by the waiting room. He sees you walk in,
yep.
Sees you sit down, looks you in the eyes, looks at your color. You don't even have to tell him if you're sick. he's got it all figured out before you open your mouth. He goes, now how do you do that by Zoom or somebody making a phone call
you
or doing
don't.
It by email? How do you even consider doing that?
Oh, and not only that, but that is what they all push now.
Yeah.
Right? Is, you know, oh, everything telemedicine. Well, it's not medicine. It's, here's a system. And, oh, by the way, then you add to this. I don't know if you caught this one, but this is just the latest in a long line of them. Just found an article out here, a study on another one of those wondrously better drugs, okay, that's out there, that supposedly... a blockbuster anti-clotting drug, You know, we've talked about Eliquis and stuff like this, right? So there's another one.
Well, you got to have another one because Eliquis is coming off the patent in about a year, so you got to have another one that costs as much, right?
Well, Tecelagir, I think, is the, if I may be pronouncing this wrong, was, yeah, Tecelagir, which is, let's see, it sold as Brintella in the U.S. and Australia and something else in Europe. Routinely prescribed after stenting, heart attacks, acute coronary syndromes, you know, things like so, you know, it's a blood thinner, right? It's
and, anticoagulant.
And by the way, I guess its competitor is Plavix, all right, which is not in the same category as Eliquis, but you know, but the same kind of thing, right?
Right.
All right. So here's the thing. Of course, this is it's a brand new drug, and therefore it's on patent. It's expensive as hell. Here's the problem. When they broke down the study data, now this was approved by the FDA, so the FDA has this data. The FDA record showed a 27% higher risk of major cardiac events than people who were using the other one. Higher.
Well, there you go. Well, that does not surprise me.
Well, so, right, so use this, the doc is, use this one, okay. The FDA approved this drug. Now remember, the premise behind something being replaced should be that it is better, faster, or cheaper. Preferably all three, right? I mean, that's the reason I have fiber internet at the house now as opposed to cable is because it's better, it's faster, and it's cheaper. It's immune to electrical damage from electrical storms, therefore can't fry all my computers if there's a lightning storm in the area, down that line anyway. I mean, down power it's still good, but not on that. It's much faster, and it costs less. That's why I buy it. This is more expensive and worse.
Well, I mean, you could actually run a... the original one was Coumadin. Which essentially is rat poison.
It is rat poison. Yeah. It's warfarin, yeah.
It also was used to kill Stalin, right?
Well, you know, it's in small amounts, it is a useful thing. But then again, all things...
Careful somebody doesn't pour that in your vodka.
Well, here's the thing. The dose is the poison for basically everything.
Yep.
Right? I mean, vodka in small amounts is pleasant. In very large amounts, you're dead.
By the way, I was thinking about you the other night when I was... Have a little bit of the 15-year whistle pig rye.
Oh, there you go.
I'm thinking, God, if I ever got a bottle of this, I'd have to invite Carl's ass up here, and he might. I know he's a Scotch guy, but he might veer off that for a little bit of this.
Well, you know what? One of the people that's on my system sent me a bottle of very old Redbreast, and oh boy, that is some good stuff.
Hey, what is an aquatic invertebrate?
What is an aquatic invertebrate?
Yeah.
Oh, it's basically a sea living organism or a water living organism that doesn't have a spine.
Is that like calamari? Must be.
Well, it could be. Yeah, that would be one of the things.
I'm looking as we're punishing Myanmar with a 25% tariff. I of course have to inquisitive mind. I have to look this up.
What is it that they import?
Yeah,
right.
Well, it turns out we do articles of apparel not knit or crocheted. Articles of apparel that are knit and crocheted.
Right.
Do you think, you know, when everybody's cheering all this stuff and how we're punishing these people, can anybody walk, you know, Carl, when we talk and we joust a little bit, and I think we joust just to get more ideas out of the other person on the show. Hopefully we're not arguing, but... the thing that really bothers the living bejesus out of me, this whole mess with what Trump is doing and this policy and that policy, and is I thought by this time, I mentioned this yesterday, I don't want to go through it again, but when I was young, I mean, very few people, well, the people who I knew that went to college, the older guys, virtually all of them were G.I. Bill. I mean, that was the neighborhood I came from.
Right.
It was the biggest move up in the middle class, or whatever you want to call it, working class. And then... my generation was the first ones in those families that actually went to college. And then all of a sudden, everybody started to go and learn, like, a lot of stuff. And I took, you know, my first economics class I took I wouldn't believe any of this crap these guys are saying. Everybody believes this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't. How have we managed to dumb the population down this much? There isn't a person that will argue with you at a coffee shop, a bar, at a family dinner table that can walk. If you put up a blackboard and say, shut your pie hole, stop arguing, and tell me how this all works dollar to dollar from start to finish. Now, not one person could even begin to do that. And yet everybody's got an opinion, and everybody's got a follower, and everybody will die for it, their opinion. I mean, you couldn't tell any, somebody I'm sure is cheering. They don't even know where Myanmar is. By the way, I don't know where the hell it is. Why we're punishing these guys with allegedly a tariff? Now, first of all, the person paying the 25% coming over here is you and me. Now, most people cannot get their arms around that one. But say, for instance, you buy a sweater from Myanmar. That would be knitted or crocheted. And you send them $100. How exactly are they screwing us necessarily? They now have $100 worth of U.S., you know, they got a Benjamin, right? Well, they need to use it for something. They're either going to buy something from us, which case it comes right back, or they're going to buy something from Britain, which means they now have your Benjamin. Right. Someplace, somewhere, it's going to come back.
Somewhere gets the Benjamin.
Yeah,
right.
It enters this loop, and it comes here. Now, the fly in the ointment is some U.S. company might actually own the company in Myanmar, where the 100 doesn't come back as a good; it comes back as profit. Which is, you think anybody has any clue, including our president, the difference between the trade deficit and the current account deficit?
Oh, absolutely not. But you know, here's the but, Chief, as I pointed out, you know, we've been running this crazy, you know, crazy. There is no limit to how much in treasuries can be emitted, and therefore the Federal Reserve has these things with which to play, right?
Yep.
Because that is, unlike the Bank of Japan, they can buy equities, the Federal Reserve cannot. So, by the way, most countries do not have this constraint on their central bank. We do.
Yep.
All right. We are somewhat unique in the world in that we have this constraint. However, that just means that we look for more creative ways to put, you know, put thumbs on the scale, so to speak, because one of the reasons that the United States dollar, you know, everyone says, oh, you know, petrodollar, that's a load of crap. One of the reasons that we have been a privileged trade currency is specifically because that constraint is there, and as a result, the increase in global trade gives us essentially a sequestered amount of dollars that can be spent in deficit without showing up in inflation. Now, that is a delta, not a level.
We're gonna have to as soon as we get Joel, we're gonna shift over to him. But
yep.
This is the thing.
This was the serious error when the Russia-Ukraine thing blew up. All right. I don't know if Biden and his people there didn't understand this, along with Yellen. Yellen damn well should have understood it, but I think she was probably the least competent person we've had as Treasury Secretary.
Oh, I think she was very competent, in a bad way.
Competent in stealing from other people, okay. But, all right, then how about if we take incompetence and malice and put them together in one bucket, and somewhere in there is her. But when we started sanctioning people that were not directly involved in Putin's enterprise, the minute we did that, we permanently destroyed that privilege. And we did it. Someone else didn't do it to us. We did it to ourselves.
Oh, we also... Let's kick this around on Friday, because it's a much bigger topic. Also,
it's huge.
We've had discipline, by and large, on our currency from day one.
No, we haven't.
Okay.
What happened in 2008?
I'm going all the way back to Civil War.
We've had more...
Let's put it this way. More discipline than others. In the last 20 years or 25 years, we've figured out that if we did this very gradually, we could be like others. We could grow money supply 5.5% a year when the growth is 2, and really empower and shove money up the behind of a certain group of people. And as long as everybody else, A, didn't catch us, and B, was doing it a little worse, We're the least worst, and we're still doing it today. But
well, it's the thing that I've said.
So we didn't do it in World War II. We didn't do it in the Civil War.
When you're in a whorehouse, the hooker who has crabs looks better than the one with AIDS. Right?
Yeah, I mean that's basically where we are. But yeah. We have Joel. Hang around in case Kenny doesn't call. I think he will, but he might be off.
I don't see Joel off.
All right. Well, then until he piles in, let's keep talking.
Yeah, when he piles in, we can keep going. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean can you imagine trying to explain this to people? By the way, the only argument that I think of anybody I've ever known that could walk up to a Milton Friedman and make an argument for tariffs would be you, and make it a sound one, because you now have 25 years of history of offloading child labor, offloading pollution.
Yeah.
that he didn't. He never foresaw
it. He didn't think it would happen.
Because why would he? Because why would he?
No. Well, all right. Joel's up, so we'll.
When he felt that deficits didn't matter because they were all in house, when he made that statement,
well,
that ain't
true no more either.
They were in house. In World War II, we borrowed money from the population.
Right. Not anymore.
Not anymore. So it didn't matter.
Chief, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're in. Okay, Carl.
Let's keep Carl on. I never get to talk with Carl.
All right, we'll talk to Carl.
Oh, you know. No.
Can I keep him on?
Sure.
Let's keep him on for a few minutes.
All right, so what's up with you? What are you doing over there? Your Detroit team. Would you get Roy Hobbs?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I got to pinch myself. Every time I mean, they are just all these years of cellar dwelling. I mean, not only are they just leading their division by 14.5 games, they just had a Cy Young Award winner, but they are loaded in the farm system for years to come. I don't know where to take this. Also, the statistic on our Riley Green, you know who Riley Green is, our All-Star outfielder? I saw a statistic that before the All-Star break, only three Tigers have had 22 doubles, over 22 home runs and 70 RBIs. Do you know who the other two are?
It's got to be like Al Kaline or somebody.
Miguel Cabrera and Hank Greenberg.
Wow.
I mean, they're the company here. A.J. Hinch is just poor. I mean, I just don't know how long it could last. I mean, you know what? But it doesn't mean anything unless you win the big prize, right? You can have the best record. They haven't won a World Series since 1984. I actually graduated college that year. It's just amazing. In fact, I'm going to the game tonight. They're playing Tampa Bay. So
good for you.
Go Tigers, man.
I always like to push back. I'll push back a little bit on that, in the sense that they're two totally different things. 162-game season means depth, it means coming back from injury, it's picking people up, it's doing all those kinds of things. It's totally different than a 3 out of 5 series.
Yeah.
I mean, matter of fact, the people who were, the Cubs were on national TV on Sunday night, they're playing the Cardinals, and, the different announcers who, I guess they're okay, but they were going through the list of teams that they wouldn't want to face in the playoffs. And like, out of the 6 teams they're talking about, 4 of them probably won't even make the playoffs. But they're saying if they get there, they've got the 2 serious pitchers. They got this, you wouldn't want to face them, like Houston.
Yeah.
I mean, and even they said if they get in there, you don't want to see Baltimore if they can find a way in, because they've all those people hurt. If they come back, if all of a sudden, and by the way, the Cubs weren't even mentioned, and they're in first place.
I know Cubbies are coming back.
But they don't have their two of their best pitchers are out. So nobody thinks that in a 4 or a 5 or 7 game series that they would prevail. Doesn't mean they couldn't, but I mean, Detroit was the name that was up there. The Yankees, they think Baltimore in a short series would be more dangerous than the Yankees. And somebody, uh-huh. I mean, but it's a whole different
what?
Brand of ball.
Yeah. I don't know. I went saw one of the games at the Double A, the Smokies now in Knoxville. Over the fourth weekend, I've been to a couple of them on gratis as a result of a friend of mine.
Right, these are the Cubs Double A for those that don't know.
Right, and they used to be in Kodiak. Well, the prices are double what they were when they were in Kodiak, right down the street. because now it's in Knoxville. Okay, so I mean, you know, the beers are $11 instead of $5, and you know, the tickets are $30 instead of $15. It really is obscene, the difference. So of course I got good and liquored up at one of the local places I like in town, which is walking distance from the stadium. That way I didn't get bent over to the table too badly at the actual game itself. But the interesting thing is, the economics on this have changed entirely. The game was sold out officially. All right, standing room only tickets you could get, but you wanted an actual butt in seat ticket, forget about it. I got one a couple of days ahead of time, and there were like 5 left in, you know, in 3 sections, and that was it.
Wow.
All right. The game starts. I swear to God, Chief, I got a picture of this. At least a third of the seats are empty. And by the time we get to the 5th, 6th inning, when, of course, you know, anyone who's coming is come, right? It's still empty. Now, the only thing that makes any sense is these guys, you know, they sold all the season tickets and nobody actually shows up.
Well, take a look at a Nationals game. Well, the best seats, you know, are a third full. You know, lobbies own all the seats.
Well, I understand that, but you know, here's the thing. All right, that's fine for the guy that owns the team, right? Because he got his money anyway.
Yep.
The guys who are the vendors, who are selling the beer and the hot dogs, they got a problem.
Oh, yeah, serious problem. Yeah. Well, you know, Joel, don't cluck off because I'm going to be a total Luddite. If I ever went back to heaven, I used to share season tickets. I will never do it unless I get physical tickets. I don't want to be I don't want to be messing around with people every night calling me at 6:30. They can't get in. I don't want to have everybody's cell phone number on my phone. I want to just give them the 4 tickets and say, "Have a nice time."
Chief, come
now
on.
See, we get a when you do them at the Smokies Park. You get emailed a PDF that looks exactly like a physical ticket. All right, so it's not one of these app things. All right, you bring up the picture on your phone and the guy scans it with his, you know, with his ticket.
Okay.
Right, and this was true in it's true in Knoxville and it was true in Kodak. I never had a problem with that.
Chief, it's so funny because the last Michigan used to send out these nice tickets, and then 2 years ago they sent out these just plain vanilla tickets, right? And they said this is the last year we're doing it, and so I saved those tickets. I didn't, you know, because you could put them on your app too, so I actually saved those tickets. But I mean, it's just technology, ease of transferring. You know, they did it a lot to cut down on fraud and everything. So.
Bullshit.
I'm an old fogey too on that, Chief.
But I'm saying, here's what I don't grab. I'm the customer. One of my buddies paid $500 every year for the Sox when he went this way to have his printed out, and then they told him we're not even going to do it even if you pay us.
I know.
But I mean, when does it become, no, you need to be inconvenienced because we want to do this. I'm the customer. I won't do it. No, but you have to. No, I don't. What are we missing here?
things have changed. But let's just talk. Yeah. Let's just talk markets, yep, for a second. I didn't get a letter about tariffs on the Big Market Prep show. Did you get a letter on tariffs about your show?
No. I'm not in Miami, or I would have.
Yeah. I mean, it is. I again. They're set, they're done, but we're still open in negotiations.
Yeah, you know, Joel, one of the things that I think is interesting is that, you know, the market sold off originally on the premise that all this stuff was going to come in, right? And then it got suspended, the market comes back, and everyone's like, okay, it's not real. Now all of a sudden, here we are, Japan and South Korea, both of which are substantial trade partners with the United States. I mean, hell, the car that's sitting in my garage was assembled in Japan. Right? Hello? Yeah. And yet, here we are, sitting at basically flat, right? We're essentially unch over the last couple days.
Oh, I mean, I think it's been, you know, I just think it's been a, you know, tremendous rally. I mean, looking at things short-term, long-term perspective, I mean... You just have, I mean, as an investor, putting away your political thoughts, putting away your whatever biases you have, I mean, the market is the market here, and it's been performing well. Though, you know, it's no slowdown as of yet, we can see. I mean, Trump keeps pushing the Fed. The Fed has been standing strong and saying, you know,
the Fed has been pouring money into the system. They're doing exactly what
Trump... I know, Chief. Chief, you got to write a white paper on that, because I only took one semester of economics pass-fail, and I passed it barely. But whatever the case may be, you can't explain it. You can't fight it. There's a lot of stocks that are not participating. You can talk about the bet. You know, it's the big tech stocks or this or that or anything. I mean, I guess this goes to show you indexing, you know, the Qs, the S&Ps, not so much the IWM. I mean, it's and I said it before. I've been saying it on this show. I've been saying it on my show. It's a Goldilocks environment here. And I think people should take advantage of it.
And right now, puts are reasonably priced.
What are those?
Yeah, what are those? What are you those for?
Well, that's right, why. Guys, that's why they're reasonably priced. Nobody wants to buy them.
Exactly. Yeah, just sell them, man. Sell those puppies for all the way. But cover them in a teeny. Cover them in a teeny. Okay, guys.
All right,
hey,
bud.
Carl. Nice being on with you. I got a hop. Chief, talk to you next week.
Yep. When we get Kenny, if
we have me.
Kenny. All right, Kyle, talk at you Friday, bud.
You bet.
All right, Kenny, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
All right, now, where are you jetting off to this morning? By the way, you like that private jet, the Gulfstream?
I'm in Cape Cod, Massachusetts for the month of July.
Careful, I heard stuff about sharks out there. They'll be looking at you like dinner.
Well, yeah, they're further up by Nantucket, Martha's Vineyard, not by me.
How do you know one guy might not swim down?
Well, he might, except I'm in the bay. I'm on the Buzzards Bay side, right by the end of the Cape Cod Canal. They don't typically come in the bay where we are.
Ah, okay.
They could, I guess, but
how's your weather? You're not waiting for that storm to hit Carolina, are you?
No. So the weather was great over the weekend. Today it's kind of soupy out, cloudy and wet. Not rainy, but just kind of thick and wet. You know.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Is there a storm coming up through South Carolina?
Well, they said there was all kinds of, you know, stuff down was running up the coast of Virginia. I don't know if it was heading out to sea or going all the way up.
Well, I guess we'll find out. Right now, it's just kind of overcast and cloudy, but not raining. But we'll see.
I was there once. Boy, I loved it. Although it was cloudy and rained the whole 3 days I was there, but still, I saw how beautiful it was.
The Cape is beautiful. I grew up here, right? I grew up here as a kid. I spent every summer here. And so for me, it's like coming home. And my whole family's here, so that's great. We get to see them. My brothers, my parents, and all that stuff. You know, my parents are 90 years old, so, you know, every time I get the chance to see them is a good day.
Well, yeah, one of my buddies was, he was the liquor manager and used to pick up the fish at the wharf for the Barnstable House.
Yeah, yeah.
That place still there? It was supposedly haunted, right?
It was supposedly haunted. I don't know that story, but yes, it was supposedly haunted, yes.
He goes, you'd be at the end of the bar, and once in a while, a bottle would fall off the other end that nobody pushed.
Nobody would know.
Yeah,
it just happened to fall off.
But he goes, what a great life. He did that. They didn't open until like 1. Did that from 1 till they closed like at 8.
Yeah.
Then you went and partied. The next morning, you got up and played tennis till 12, and you went to work. He goes, what?
Working it. Yeah.
It doesn't get any better than that, does it?
No, it doesn't get any better.
What do you make of this market? I mean, what Joel said is absolutely true. It keeps going up, 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 except for yesterday. But I think
we ran into the highs like we typically do going into the July 4th weekend, right? It's the low volume week. A lot of people are away. Moves can be exaggerated. We got into an overbought condition on, you know, if you looked at the relative strength index on the S&P, it was well above 70, which suggests, you know, to everybody that, okay, we're in a little bit of overbought territory. So expecting, no one should be surprised by a pullback. I wouldn't actually be surprised if we tested, I put this in my note this morning, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw the S&P pull back to like the 6150 area, which is down about 100 points from where we are right now. So what's that, about 2%, maybe one in three going. I wouldn't be surprised to see that as we move into earnings season, which starts, in earnest on the 15th with the release of J.P. Morgan, right? That's the first Dow stock to report, so therefore that's the official start of the season. But we'll get Delta Airlines, you'll get Pepsi, I think Friday of this week. or Monday, maybe. I have to look. But, you know, the first Dow stock to report will be J.P. Morgan, and that's on Tuesday, along with a lot of the big banks. So I think the market's just kind of churning ahead of the start of earnings season until we start to see what the C-suite says about what the future looks like.
What do you tell a guy like me that, you know, likes to, not that you don't, it's like to look at all the stuff that's going on in the last 2-3 days. You see these 10-year rates and 30-year rates, 30 more so, screaming up again. They've been down quite a bit. Now they're screaming up again.
The 30-year is nearly kissing 5%. Yeah. I think it's at 4.95 right now, right?
No, it was way down. You got down in the almost a 4.7. Now it's 4.93.
Okay, right.
So it's getting there.
It's right there. It's certainly up from 4.75, wherever it was. And so I think you have to just be a little bit cautious, right? 5% seems to be, 5% in the 30-year seems to be an area that causes some caution and concern for the markets. And so, you know, that's why I said it feels a little bit tired up here. And so a pullback would not surprise me at all until we get, you know, certainly more clarity around earnings and certainly more clarity around the new tariff notices that went out. But look, the first 14 countries, and I also put this in my note, you know, Serbia and Herzegovina and Bangladesh and Thailand, those aren't really countries that are major trading partners with us. So I don't put a lot of emphasis on those particular trade policies. You have to look at the bigger countries, right? You have to look at Japan and certainly the European Union, China, some of the bigger countries that we have much bigger trade with. Those are the agreements that I'm really, really curious about. But I'm not gonna, you know, lose my mind over a trade agreement with Bosnia or Serbia. I'm just not.
Well, but it's something that obviously they don't have the ability to cut 25% out of that price. So if you're buying something from them, you're going to pay.
Correct. But I guess the question is, and I, you know, I was thinking about this as I was writing a note this morning. Well, where am I really buying most of the stuff that we buy in this country? If it's not manufactured here, where's it really coming from? It's coming from the major trading partners. I don't think, I was trying to think of,
well,
what
Japan
was
the
last thing I bought from Bosnia.
But Japan is. But why do we have a guy who stays up at night looking for a way to screw Bosnia?
Well, I agree. But which is why I think that that's gonna all settle itself down. I don't think that the rates that they were talking about today, 25 or 30% on those countries, is gonna hold. I think it's gonna cause, you know, a conversation, and I think they're gonna be much different than what they appear to be right now.
Except a guy like you, since you send out recipes all the time. Now we get from Myanmar, fish, crustaceans, mollusks, in aquatic invertebrates. Now, I think that would mean calamari, and I've seem to have seen some recipes from you with calamari.
You have, but I'm not sure. Well, you know what? Actually, that's a good question, because when I go to the fish store to buy calamari, I'm not asking where did this come from. I'm assuming it came from someplace more local, right? If we're getting it from Myanmar, that would be news to me, but it doesn't necessarily say that. When you go to the fish store, it doesn't say this fish is from Myanmar. I'm assuming it's either from the Pacific Ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, you know, Maine. Lobsters I'm getting from Maine. I'm getting fish in Florida. I'm getting fish along, you know, the eastern seaboard. I'm assuming. Now, guess what? To your point, it doesn't advertise where the fish comes from, so I'm not really sure.
What do you tell a goofball like me that should never do this? Because it's obvious to everybody, I mean, it ought to be, that the market is resilient. Kenny, we got clients here by the dip. I mean, we have guys doing electronic stuff, and we manage money for some people, and other people do their own thing, and they do stuff. And every down day is a dip, and we're seeing that this morning. I mean, nobody even knows why we were down yesterday. They don't care. I mean, but I'm looking at some of these things, and I shouldn't do this. I'm keeping track of what some of these numbers on some of these accounts, but the stocks that are run up here. And I picked on this Oracle because they were one of the top five back in 2000.
Uh-huh.
Now, Oracle, I don't know if hopefully you haven't done this. You have better things to do. They're pushing a 50 PE, which is not really the thing I look at. I look at the revenue per share.
Yep.
They're up to 13 times revenue.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. Oracle is not a name that I own, nor a name that we own. So I don't follow it.
Well, but I mean, Microsoft... is somewhat the same way. Now, how the hell does Microsoft double? How does, I mean, we're reaching a point here where if you pick out 7 or 8 of the top 10 and you ask them all to double, which is really how they're priced, like they're going to, they're priced like our growth stock, yep, either every other country's company's got to fall apart, or somehow or another the economy's got to double. I mean, and the thing that that bothers the living bejesus out of me here, Kenny, and I make sure, you know, my people, I just say, you know, I'm just giving you the numbers. I mean, if you want to protect yourself, I'll help you. If not, if you don't, you don't, because obviously we've been talking about how, you know, puts are for chumps at this point, right? Because, I mean, it's all, I mean, well, how many, you know, we've been dragging puts for 20 years for people, and we've done okay because we made some money on the calls, but we'd been way better off. I mean, hell, if I went back to 16 and never bought car insurance, I'd be better off. Knock on wood, I haven't cracked up. You know, but I mean, I'm looking here in 2000, 1-3-2000, when Oracle, Cisco, all those companies made it to the point where they were over 11, 12 times revenue, not PE.
Right,
revenue. It's too friggin' high, Kenny. And I'm looking at 1-3-2000, Oracle is $125. 4 months later, it's 28. I mean, some of these prices, are we in that kind of range?
Well, some of these prices are getting mispriced like this because we're now in the middle of this massive technology AI revolution, which I think is at the very beginning stages, right? So I actually think we could see these numbers get a little bit more distorted before they actually correct, just because this whole fanaticism around AI and where it's going to take us and where it's going to go and what it's going to do for the economy and what's it going to do for business and all that stuff is still very much in its infant stages. So you could see, I think, that bubble continue to grow, right? It's just going to be when either it breaks or we get to the point then where we've had this, you know, massive move because of this technology, and then stocks have to reprice after we've had that move. I'm not really sure when that's going to happen, but that's kind of where I think we are. So I think you can justify some of the valuations in these stocks just because they're so connected to the AI infrastructure and the AI revolution. I'm not going to be one to say, oh, well, it's got to stop here, it's got to stop there.
Oh, I'm never going to put a time on that. I mean, I'm never going to do it either. I connect the dots between every single time.
Yeah.
The Fed has gone crazy.
Yeah.
With pouring money in the system, like when Greenspan was 1% interest, God knows why, in the 2006 or 7 era. Every single time, some sort of phobia, be it China, cloud, click-throughs, some kind of phobia rears its ugly head, doesn't it? When there's money awash, there's always a phobia that pops up. Tulips, you name it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, am I right? Yeah. I mean, if it wasn't AI, it'd be something else. I mean,
correct.
Because the fact is,
right now it's AI, right?
One thing we're not going to have time to discuss it at length, but what do you make of, you look at stocks like Nvidia and Microsoft. Kenny, I have people that I, you know, put some money to work in the last few weeks. They don't want any part of those stocks because they think they're too high.
Yeah.
Yet we're buying the S&P or the Qs. We're still putting 40% of our money in those stocks.
Yeah, that's right. So either you don't, right? Or maybe you put it in the equal weight, which gives you less exposure, right? Because it qualifies everything, gives everything an equal weight.
Yeah, but then your options trade is crap. I mean,
correct. But I would agree with you. There are some people that don't want to get involved because they think it's already too high. But then you ask the question, are you going to miss the boat? Because every time we say this, these stocks just continue to move higher, right? Because there's certainly a lot of demand out there. So I'm not one that's going to try to pick the tops and the bottoms. I'm just trying to manage the risk. So just based on your risk is going to dictate, you know, how I trim or add to those positions.
I think right now in some of these spots, even in, to not have some sort of, even if it's Armageddon protection, is, again, depends on the person. I mean, if you've got, I mean, I'm reaching the age where a lot of my friends are retired. Their portfolio looks like it did when they were 55 and working. I mean, without any regard to where the market is, I think, to be honest with you, in my mind, I'm just picking on Oracle because I started with it. Even though people would disagree with me, it's way more risky at 235 than it was at 135. I'm sorry. I mean,
which is why I wouldn't be buying Oracle right now, right? I wouldn't be chasing Oracle right now. I missed it, so I'm going to let it run. I'm not certainly chasing it at all, right? I'm not even chasing. Look, NVIDIA just made a new high the other day, right? It traded off, but it made a new high on Thursday. I own it. We own it. I'm not buying it up here at all. But if it pulls back, I'll add to it. But any of those names that are now getting pricey and stuff, if we own them, we're not adding to them. We're looking for other places to put money to work. And that will help bring that risk down, because you'll allocate new money to different sectors. And then you'll just, by default, end up kind of rebalancing. And if you're too weighted in some of those names, then you should. Just regular risk management is going to demand that you trim around the edges without taking it completely away.
What is it when you see NVIDIA, like it was up a couple of weeks ago, really pretty good, right? When you see it up like $8, in a 2 or 3 day period, which we did see, right?
Yeah.
When I start thinking of, I mean, I foolishly remember how many shares are outstanding, and I just go, "That's $200 billion. That's more than the top." Anything but the top five price stocks total in the year 2000.
Right.
And I just, this, to me, Kenny, I should never have gone to the University of Chicago, because all it does is pop in my mind, this is not a stock phenomenon, this is a currency phenomenon.
Well, and it very well may be a currency phenomenon, but that speaks to exactly why guys like me, again, I'm not chasing it. I'm not putting new money in. Clients own what they own. They own them at lower prices. I'm certainly not chasing it up here because I agree with you. I think it's a little bit overdone, which is why I'm not surprised if we see them.
Where does it have to go? And again, I'm not born indie, but we did a lecture. These guys did a seminar, just how crazy things were in 2000, Kenny, you remember. It was, everybody had scratch money in these stocks that were just going up, right? We actually had a seminar, these guys had a seminar in the Bahamas, and we were invited to go speak down there, and I had never been to Bahamas, and Audrey's telling me how great it was, and I thought it kind of sucked, but that would just be me. Maybe because they had mosquitoes in the place I was lecturing, they were biting me and threw the socks while I was trying to talk. Maybe that was part of the problem, I didn't like it. But anyway, people were so, and the stock is still around today and still runs up and down like there's no tomorrow, is Micron.
Yeah.
And Micron is trading about 95, and it just was on a tear. Right. So it was, I'm not putting you in the same class as the retail people that were there, but most of them were pretty smart. And I go, okay, what's it going to take for this weekend? Or this week for Micron on Sunday or Monday morning, you go to sleep on Sunday night, you have a couple of beers, and on Monday morning you roll over and you go, that's enough. And somebody, hand goes up, that day will never come. And I said, okay, Micron's trading $95.
Yeah.
Let's just say if I had some scratch, I'll give you 110 for it right now. 10 hands go up. It proves you're trying to steal it from us. You know it's worth 125, was the answer.
Right.
I'm going to say 3 days, 3 years later, it was six, wasn't it? Or 10 or something?
Yeah.
I mean what's it going to take if NVIDIA is up $10 today? And I'm not, putting a flame up your behind. I'm saying, what would it take if NVIDIA is up $15 there for you to call your people and say, that's it, we're done? What number? Is there one?
Yeah, I don't know if there's one. That's an interesting thought. I'd have to go back and look at it. I don't know if there's one. I mean, I suppose there has to be one. At some point, there has to be one, right? Because everything's for sale at a price.
Yeah, I mean, it's when you start hearing stuff like, there is no price, it's only going higher, it just makes me really nervous, because I've done this twice, 87, 2000, and maybe 2008. I mean,
there's always a price when you trim a little bit, because that's just risk management, right? What's that price? Well, you have to look at what future valuations are going to look like. What's the growth? Now, we're going to learn about this at the end of the month when NVIDIA comes out, right? So people then are going to readjust their estimates based on what they hear out of Jensen Huang. Like they are going to, for any one of these stocks where the earnings are going to start, they're going to listen to what the C-suite says, and then they're going to make new assessments on, okay, what's the proper valuation? Where is this stock going? Is it overpriced? Time to sell? That's when you'll get a clearer reaction.
But you also are somewhat, there's the idea of specific pricing, and then there's relative pricing. I mean, if you look at, and I'm not bashing these stocks at all. I'm asking the question. If you sit there and go, God, this Nvidia looks historically, and you obviously can do that. It looks pretty damn high, but boy, all the other stocks around it are even higher. And oh, by the way, they're not as good. That gives you one number.
Right.
Okay. Or you might say they're all too high. One of these days we're going to have a 2001. Hopefully not. And they're all going to come flying down, and then we're all going to, you know, all going to get the shoe up to behind. I mean, it's like two separate questions, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it is two separate questions, but that's the whole. That's why you and I do what we do, because people look to us to try to help them manage that risk and make those decisions, right? And not everyone is going to be 100%. Because look, you could say, whatever, $150 is the price that you're going to sell Nvidia. You could sell it's going to go to 180, right? Or it could go to 110. You don't know, but that's part of our job, is to help manage that risk.
Well, I will say, boy, I never say this. I'll say categorically that 2 years from now, you and I are doing a show, and we're still healthy.
Yeah.
Oracle will not be a 13 times revenue. It'll either pick up the revenue stream, like we hope, or it'll be down. It's not going to sit there at that size for two or 3 years at 13 times revenue.
Right. One of two things has to happen.
And we hope it's A.
Yeah, sure. Of course.
And it could be. I mean, that's where Kyle and I have our, you know, kind of a disagreement. I think if the economy was run properly, which I think it's going off the rails again because the money's pouring back in. But if it was run properly and we nipped the money supply growth down to where we aren't going to have any inflation instead of making sure we have inflation, I think there's a chance that the economy could grow into these prices.
Yes, I think
there's a chance. But that's not what they're doing. They're pushing it even more. And Carl's convinced we're so far gone that there's no way that could happen. And my thought is, you got to give me a chance. You got to let me try at least. even if I might agree with you, you got to let me try at least. But this, you know, 1%, 100 billion in market cap in 2 days, what's another 100 billion? I mean, God, Kenny, it's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. It's a lot.
Even for you.
Yeah, even for me.
By the way, what did you get on a trade-in on that Lear toward the Gulfstream?
Oh, yeah. Listen, I'll talk to you next.
You know what? Hey, I got a quick one about the Lear. These guys came in for a seminar, husband and wife, and the guy comes in on a Gulfstream. This is 1990-something, right?
Yeah.
So he goes, hey, you want to come out and see my plane? I didn't offer me a ride or anything. I used to see it, right? So I go out, and, of course, I'm BSing with the pilots. And, of course, everything, there's a checklist. It's like your car or a boat. I mean, a boat's worse. You know, the latch on the bathroom. They had like 10 things they got to fix when they get back home. None of them, you know, the thing running or not. It all had to do with, you know, the cigarette, whatever, the drink holder and one thing's broken. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. So the lady's telling me, yeah, we had a Lear. You couldn't get me in that thing. And I go, what are you talking about? She goes, well, the bathroom was a seat right behind the pilots where you pulled the cushion off, and that was the can. She goes, I told him, you're not getting me one of those planes unless I have a real bathroom. So he went out, he traded in and got the Gulfstream. There you go.
That is true, because that's how bathrooms are in those planes.
I don't know if I'd be happy in the Lear either, with the thing right behind the pilot. Just saying. So now I know why, you know, you got rid of the Lear, but that's okay. Anyway, Kenny, you be good. Enjoy yourself. How long are you hanging up at the Cape?
I'm here until the end of the month, the end of
July. Wow, good for you. Well, we'll talk again. Who knows? One of these days, I might run into you one of these days, but that would sure be nice. Do we have Professor Hal on the line?
Yes, we do.
Hal, how are you, buddy?
I'm in the boardroom at the Hilton near Times Square for the week.
You're staying in the boardroom for a week?
Well, we're having a coaching seminar, NAACE coaching seminar.
Which Hilton? Which Hilton? I've been in a couple of them.
The Hilton right there on 42nd near Bryant Park.
Hilton Times Square. I've stayed there.
Yeah, they've remodeled it. It's really nice.
That's not the one with the. What's the one with the big theater in the downstairs?
Is that? I don't know. Yeah.
This one's old, right? This building's old.
Well, the building is old, but they did a remodel of it. It's the Hilton Garden.
Okay.
At Times Square. Yeah.
All right. So
it's just down the street from the Bryant Park, which is incredible.
Oh, good for you.
I'm actually staying with my mother-in-law. I rode the subway in today. My mother-in-law and my father-in-law out there in Brooklyn. I think they would have been up, you know, offended if I would have stayed at the hotel and not visited them. So I rode the subway in today, and now I'm in the boardroom in the basement of the hotel. So I might have to cut it a little early, because our meetings start at 9.
All right.
So I'm just giving you forewarning.
Well, what do you make of world news? And are you gonna cut back on your purchases from Bangladesh and Myanmar now and stuff?
Well, I did a little estimating. I asked Brock how much a U.S. importer might pay for a sweater made in Myanmar. And, you know, Grok gave a range of 2 to 5. So I said, let's say 4. And you throw on a 25% tariff, that moves it from 4 to 5. And then a U.S. retailer might sell 50. And if you can, if the tariff is passed through all the way to the U.S. consumer, the importer can pass it, the retailer can pass it. The 25% tariff is really only a 2% tariff. And that's assuming that the tariff can be passed 100% all the way through to the U.S. consumer. So I think when Nike says their shoes are going to go up by, you know, $20, I think they're overstating the effect of the tariff on them, because they're only paying, what, $15, $20 for a pair of Nikes made in one of these countries.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, that would be actually very interesting. I've heard varying opinions on that. I mean, there's no doubt, just so everybody understands, it's on the price that comes this way. Now, how you work that in terms of if you own both companies, in terms of transfer pricing,
yeah.
I mean, it can happen one of two ways. Give me a second. Now, either there's a, you know, I'm Nike and I'm importing
it's
shoes.
It's not a sales tax at the retail level in the United States. That's my whole point.
No, but whatever it is, whatever, yeah. I mean, we're talking about an administration that is estimating $600 billion.
Well, I think their estimates are way off.
I do too, but yeah. At that number, the thing you have to, well, you don't have to, but you should hold in your mind, you're paying that. All right, that's number one. That's one piece of BS you're getting out of these people. But the other is, you're into one of two ways. Either Nike's buying it from Hal's Shoe Company in Vietnam or wherever the hell he's buying it from, and the tariff when it gets here, if Nike's buying it from Hal's Shoe Company at $20, the tariff's going to be $4, right?
Yeah.
$5. It's 25%, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I know sometimes it's 20, sometimes it's 25.
I have no idea what the tariff rates are.
Well, but I've been saying, but yesterday they were talking 25, so it's $5 that is paid by Nike or the minute it comes in.
Yeah, the cost of goods go up.
And that cost, that check goes to the federal government, correct?
Yeah.
All right. So there's no dispute on that. Although people seem to think that.
Although the federal government can send it to me, I could use it.
Okay, but they also. It could be Nike Vietnam could be the company over there.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, somewhere it's going to get from whatever it costs.
Well, Nike, I don't think Nike owns a factory anywhere.
Okay,
they
the operative word is if. If yeah. Nike owned it,
yeah.
I think, since we don't seem to be able to do any transfer pricing, we can't do it for taxation, they could bring that pair of shoes in at $2. Take whatever loss they think are taken in the Vietnam place, pay now, well, it's 50 cents tariff, and the markup's on this end.
Yeah. Right. Well, so, think about tariff pricing, though. You have to be able, as a tariff pricing economist, you have to be able to demonstrate to the powers that be that the prices that you're paying internally within your company are kind of a free market or market price. So I think you have difficulty. All of a sudden, hey, we were paying 4, but we're going to mark it down to 2. The taxing agencies might have a problem.
I very rarely do this.
Well, I have a friend who went to grad school who wrote a chapter in the transfer pricing economics textbook, and he says it has to be a. I think if you were paying 4 forever, internally, and then all of a sudden you lower it to 2. I think the powers of be would might have an issue with that.
I would never argue with my cerebral friend in terms of the theory and the law.
Yeah, yeah.
However, my cerebral friend also realizes that at one point Starbucks, with 90 bazillion Starbuckses in London, somehow managed to have all their profit in Amsterdam when they had like 3. Because they moved the beans through Amsterdam. So
yeah.
It's you're right conceptually, but duh. Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think he mentioned something about how somebody mentions, I think it was on a show, about how just talking about policy change. Oh, my mother-in-law said this. My mother-in-law, my brother-in-law, Chris, were talking about the mayor, the Democratic mayor candidate. Just talking about policy, which he can't implement, might cause people to move, right, to relocate to Florida or Tennessee. And I remember watching this on 60 Minutes a while ago about Leslie Stahl interviewing somebody about transfer pricing and IP, putting IP in tax-free havens. And the politician said something to the effect of, well, my companies, if they do that, I think we'll have to do is we'll have to require them to move their corporate boards,
yeah,
not just a piece of paper. And just the talk of that, and she reported this, just the talk that caused a company in Texas to move their board to Zurich, Switzerland, just talking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Well, the first...
I think firms can get spooked pretty quickly.
Well, the first outfit, and this is, well, when I say the first, first one that I knew about, would that move stuff some other place. Remember, it's going back a ways. Remember Forest Labs? You ever heard that name?
If it's been 20 years ago, I probably...
It had to be at least that. They were one of the first drug companies to move offshore. If not the first.
Yeah.
And this is when I always have this big...
Are they still called Forest Labs?
No, they were bought by somebody.
Okay.
But they I think they kicked themselves down to the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did is...
Yeah, the Bahamas is a great tax-free haven.
Yeah, well, depending on what you're doing. I mean,
yeah.
I used to know some of this because I managed a hedge fund.
Maybe I'm thinking of Cayman Islands.
Caymans are big.
Yeah.
Bahamas got... I'll tell that story a little bit when I'm done with this one because they've become incredibly expensive. You need a trust over there. You need an attorney over there. You need your accountant had to be there and that kind of crap.
Yeah.
So this trust or this hedge fund that I managed... for like a year, I finally said, guys, at this amount of money you got in here, there was like $2 million in the fund, and we were doing halfway decent, but they needed like 10 grand a month just for expenses. No way that's happening. I mean, I might be able to make 120 grand, but I sure as hell not going to make it every 10 grand a month. If ever you have a really successful year trading, if you're lucky, you got six break-even months, maybe a few you're down a little bit, and the rest somehow you kick ass, right? It's never even. I mean, it's not an annuity. I mean, anyway, so what these guys did, that's why I have this constant argument with my discussion with my brother and other people regarding how you can simplify the tax code. No, you can't, because people find a way around it if it's simple, and you got to make it more and more complex. What these guys did is they wanted to move the taxation offshore. Now, how exactly could you do that? Now, I would, if I could imagine stuff like this, I mean, hell, you and I would be, you know, we'd be smoking cigars in Zurich or someplace.
Oh, there's a whole industry about it, man.
But they moved, they shifted, they found Forest Labs Light or some other firm in the Bahamas, and they shifted their U.S. patents to that firm.
Yeah.
Then they paid rent to the patents that were issued by the U.S.
Yeah.
So they essentially...
Burger King can do that with respect to all of its trademarked...
Yeah.
Names, right? Like Whopper and whatnot. They can offshore.
Yeah. Let's say, for instance, Stacks and Jacks was ever an ass kicker money wise, right? I could send Ricky to Liechtenstein if he wanted to go. I'm not going to send him an ass. And he could sit over there and I could put the trademark Stacks and Jacks over there and I could pay the, you know, Stacks and Jacks Liechtenstein 50 grand a month if we were making that kind of money. And for Ricky to send in the schedule of guests every week or some crap like that. And I'd pay Ricky, you know, $5,000 a month. I mean, I'd do better than that because I'm not like that. But I could pay Ricky $5,000 a month to hang out over there. So I'm in essence shoving $45,000 a month over to Liechtenstein. You can't catch me. How the hell are you going to catch me?
That's kind of what Sam Bankman-Fried did. They set up an office in the Bahamas.
It's immoral. Right? It's not right, but catch me. Tell me that
it's not against the law.
Tell me that you know that, especially if Ricky calls you up once a week and says, "Hey, I'll remember you're on Tuesday," whatever. If he does that, who's to say that function? If I couldn't do it without him, I couldn't do it without him. He's my consultant. Try and tell me it's worth $42,000 instead of $45,000. Good luck.
You know this 60 Minutes episode. they reported that there were like 20,000 companies with just a piece of paper in some lockbox in some building that nobody was in, and there was a one conference room that nobody ever used. Like 20,000 companies that were hiding their IP over there, their articles of incorporation. Their IP or their corporation papers were there. Nobody was in the building, and the town is only like 28,000 people, yet there were 20,000 companies there.
One of my buddies, who is now retired, so I guess I could give the story, he and a friend of his had a...
This all goes to that Laffer curve. I don't like to call it the Laffer curve. I like to call it the Mukdifa curve, because Ibn Khaldun, 12th century Islamic scholar, basically came up with the idea of the Laffer curve. Back in the 12th century, he said, when nations start, their tax rates tend to be low, and then as they age, they continuously raise their revenues or their tax rates, and their revenues shrink. And that's where Art Laffer got
this idea. But people also, one thing that you and I, anyway, he and his buddy, they developed a pretty much a canned, for lack of a better term, a music term, a canned outline for bringing small and mid-sized banks offshore. And they charged, this has had to be 25 years ago, they charged $350,000 at the time when $350,000 was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And they I don't know how many they brought offshore. They said, okay, you want to do it, here's the place, get you the P.O. box, get you whatever the hell you need. Some place now, Bahamas, that's why I think they became a not as nice of a spot, because you had to do a bunch of crap down there. You needed your attorney down there. You needed to pay for the trust. You needed all kinds of crap.
Well, if you really think about it, you're drawing all these people over your homes, right?
What?
You have all this demand for, like, office space.
Yeah.
So you have all this demand, and that's going to push prices up, which is why it's probably...
You got to get a little closer to the mic, bud.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, there's expenses with doing that. It's not free.
Yeah.
I mean, you better be... It's not like... I mean, PTI is not going to go hire an accountant and an attorney and an office space and everything else behind them just to dodge taxes. I mean, for God's sake.
It all goes back to the Laffer curve or the Mukdifa curve. My mother-in-law and I were talking about this. She was telling me that, because we were talking about this with respect to the new DNC mayor candidate, the guy that won the primary. But she was telling me that she had a friend who owned movie theaters in Haiti back in the 70s. And he ended up moving to New York City, and he was a parking lot attendant. So he was this big businessman in Haiti, and she was trying to figure out why he ended up being a parking attendant in New York City. And I said, well, probably what happened is the Haitian dictator probably dialed up tax rates a little bit. That caused a few people to move and leave the country, maybe to New York City and maybe to Florida. And as those productive business people leave, it leaves fewer and fewer people to pay taxes. So now they got to dial the tax rate up again. So they just keep dialing it up. That squeezes all these businesses out. It squeezed him out, and he ended up, instead of paying a high tax rate in Haiti and running his own businesses, movie theaters and whatnot, it was actually more beneficial for him to be an attendant in a hospital parking lot. So I think that's what happens. And so I think what countries have to do, and they use laws like visas and border walls and whatnot to try to trap people inside the boundaries of their country, and then they can dial the taxes up. And they're hoping that these restrictions will prevent them from leaving the country. But these corporations, they'll find. They're like rats and roaches. They'll find these tax-free havens, like the 20,000 companies in Zug. Or the companies that are talking about leaving, the investors.
Well,
that are leaving,
they also pay people off to not get caught.
Yeah,
Compliance
is the big part of the Laffer curve. When you raise taxes rates so high, you create this incentive to push all your activity underground, and so the government can't tax it.
Well,
people just don't work.
But you end up in a situation where, clearly it's not like we haven't always done it.
But.
We have an administration now that doesn't even care if they tell you they're doing it. The people they favor, they just favor instead of hiding it. I mean, it's like, you know, yeah. I mean, it's funny. You know, I know you're a you're a very moral dude. I was having some discussion with somebody, and they go, I said, well, look at the money that is just flowing to this guy. You know, people are showing up at his place with $1 million check. You know, for
yeah.
And somebody would say, yeah, but LBJ got bags of cash. And I said, okay, now, I'm not being dictatorial here, or whatever, or not being a preacher. So what does that tell you? And the guy says to me, I have no idea. What are you talking about?
I said, well, the whole system's broke.
I said, but if somebody gets a bag of cash, what that tells me is the person knows he's doing something immoral and he's hiding it.
Yeah.
If somebody just does it right in front of your face, he's totally amoral. He doesn't even know it's wrong.
Yeah.
He thinks it's okay. That to me is so much worse than LBJ.
You could say it's transparent.
I guess it sort of gets you to the same place. But some people, when they tell a lie, at least
I think politics is just a dirty business.
And you to a degree,
the table, you can under the table.
To a degree, Putin's a hell of a lot more crooked than Winston Churchill was.
Yeah,
I mean, we're not even on the same planet. What is he up to? $1 trillion he's taken or something?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
the Russian economy is basically one just.
Yeah, which isn't to say Churchill didn't get a free dinner every now and then, right? But the degree is not even.
Well, but Putin has to have food tasters because he might be eating a plutonium sandwich, right?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, he might be eating the rat poison like Stalin.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to.
Well, that's why I say politics is just. I hate politics. I hate political discussions. I hate the negotiations that go on behind the curtains. I just find it all disgusting.
But that's the way
people. Politics is just a dirty word.
But that's how people.
Politics is like the first curse word on the planet to me.
But that's how people. I always go back to the basics. Yeah. And when you're talking about taxes, now, you know, 50 of us decide to put up our huts in one spot. And then it's 100 of us, then it's 200 of us, and all of a sudden we go, okay, we're not going to run around if somebody steals something. We're not going to run around and beat his head. We need a Marshall Dillon. Okay, we got to pay Marshall Dillon. Or we need a fire department. We got to pay those guys. We need a street. Cattle are down here pooping in the street. Doesn't look so good. We better get ourselves a street. We all start to share in this, okay? And I don't think there's really a problem with that. But as I get older, it's not about every time somebody finds a way to weasel out. And you see it on TV every day, who's weaseling out and taxes and everything else. It's gotten to the point now where, morality aside, every time some ass does that, I pay more.
Yeah.
And I'm getting tired of it. You know,
I think that's the purpose of it, right?
Yeah, without a doubt.
I am almost positive. I don't have any data for this, but you asked the question, who benefits, pro bono. And I would bet $100, and I've got $100 to bet, but I bet $100 that the cartel, these guys that runs the cartel, all these cartel companies in Mexico, the drug cartel, I would suspect that they're behind the high taxes and regulation of legal marijuana in California and New York City, because it creates a black market for them. I would be shocked.
Well, there's no
they
question.
They were behind lobbying for the drug war. They want these drugs to be illegal. They want these high regulations and these high taxes because, you know, New York City, the legal cigarette market is smaller than the illegal cigarette market because of the incredibly high taxes that are on just cigarettes. So, and the same thing goes with pot, legal pot in New York City and California. And that's one thing I don't like about my visit to New York City is as soon as I got on the subway, all I could smell is pot.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't smelled pot since we moved to North Carolina, and I smell it everywhere.
Well, you just walk out of our front door here, you'll smell it.
Yeah.
You walk across the expressway. The guys with the, what do you call them, the moon roofs? You're coming out of there, it looks like it's a Western movie, and they're smoking cigarettes.
But Tom, the tax system that we have in the United States, the big corporations who have the teams of lawyers and accountants, the highest, the best talent, the highest priced talent, I guarantee you they probably love this system. Because they have the ability to navigate through and avoid all these speed bumps.
$1,200 an hour these guys are charging. So, yeah.
It's almost like a cartelizing tool that can be used to create barriers to entry. So, It's a marriage between the moneyed corporations and the politicians.
But look at the
both politicians.
But everything you do has a cost, and who picks up the cost? I mean, right now you've got we've got to go to break, but the gambling industry. Look how many families have been destroyed by gambling.
Yeah. Now, and the worst house is the government house, though.
Right. You look at the marijuana gets legalized here in Chicago.
Massive tax.
The whole damn city's high, and everybody's driving a million miles an hour. Everybody's high. There's not even a test for it, like drunken driving.
Yeah.
I mean, to say there's no cost to this.
Yeah.
And now you could say that the reason why the taxes are there is so, you know, the city's picking up how many more people are they feeding because they don't go to work because they're high all day. I mean, do you think there's no cost? There is. There's a huge cost. Mm-hmm. And those people don't pay. I mean, what do you suppose the total tab of all the people, for God's sake, I mean, I'll talk about this more at a break. How many people are at the veterans' homes getting chemotherapy today because they smoked cigarettes their whole life and were dumped with Agent Orange in Vietnam? What's the number of those people?
Yeah.
20,000? And we're paying for it. Tobacco companies aren't.
Yeah.
The people who made Agent Orange aren't, are they? I don't think so. SP Futures up 5.
Back to this.
We got to have a break, Hal. SP Futures up 5. Okay. NASDAQ is up 58. Be right back. Professor Hal and me.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. S&P Futures up 5, NASDAQ Futures up 56. Trying to bounce back from yesterday. We actually ended up further down yesterday than we were up on Thursday, which I never thought we'd make. One of the most interesting moves yesterday as well was that gold was way down in the morning and ended up on the day. Now it's down a little bit today, but it had made a huge recovery during the day yesterday, which is a little bit sort of interesting. What am I doing? I'm spinning here. I'm trying to. I have so much stuff up here, Ricky. Why don't you traffic, weather, sports? No, here we go. Here we go. I got it. Dow futures are up a whole point, so not much going on there over in Europe. We've got the. Yesterday the DAX was up pretty big, and the other guys were not. Right now, Porsche China's sales slumped 28%. So you're not buying a Porsche over in China, Ricky, eh? That's your thing. You have to do traffic, weather, sports, and get back to me here. So.
Absolutely. Good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:31 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago, 70 degrees right now, with a high of 83, partial sunshine with a thunderstorm in spots from late morning on. Tonight, mostly cloudy and humid with a probable thunderstorm as well, and low of 71 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 91 degrees right now with a high of 113. Hot with plenty of sunshine, and here will be dangerous, so try to minimize outdoor activity out there. Tonight will be clear and very warm with a low of 89 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's looking at 41 minutes, inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 56 minutes, inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 39 minutes, and inbound Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 33 minutes. Lastly, MLB. Yesterday, White Sox lose to Blue Jays 4-8, but Diamondbacks beat Padres 6-3. Today, we got Cubs at Twins at 6:40 p.m., Blue Jays at White Sox at 6:40 p.m., and Diamondbacks at Padres 8:40 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
Over the DAX, up 27.1%, FTSE up 11.1%, CAC around down 20.2%, so basically nothing going on over in Europe. Over in Asia, we've got the 10-year rates. Look, this is dangerous here a little bit. The 30-year rates are up another 29 ticks to 4.96. 10-year up another 26, 4.42. So these interest rates have been racing up here the last 3 days. I think the market should be a little concerned about that, but it doesn't appear to be today, at least. The Nikkei up 101.2%. Hang Seng up 261%. Shanghai up 24.7%. So pretty much up over there. We've got oil down 6 cents, 67.87. After the run up to 77, it's right back down. Brent up 4 cents, 69.62. We've got gold down $5, 33.36. Again, I made a big recovery yesterday. We'll see if it does again today. Silver down 8 cents, 36.82. Foreign exchange, the euro is up. It was up to 1.17. The British pound 1.36. So they're dollar has been a little weaker the last couple of weeks. And last but not least, crypto up 580, Bitcoin 108.744. We already did traffic, weather, sports. Hal, what do you make of some of the valuations I was talking about with Kenny? I mean, we're reaching 2,000 numbers on some of these stocks. And when I say that, I talk about, you know, revenue per share, you know, times revenue instead of times earnings. I mean, earnings can go back and forth. I mean, if you're in, you're investing more stuff and you can do a lot with earnings. But when you start pushing 50 times earnings, 13 times revenue, you better be a growth company. And some of these big companies right now, your Microsofts, your Oracles and stuff, are reaching these numbers and they're just not sustainable. I mean, maybe the company can grow into it, which would be nice, or maybe they're just too high. I mean, how high can we go with the economy not really doing that well? How much higher can the market go up another 20% with the economy growing 1% or not growing at all? I mean, I guess it can, but does that make you nervous?
Well, it's all an inflation story to me. I mean, you look at the all transaction home price index for the United States, it's touching 700. It was just under 400 at the end of the 2007-2008 home bubble, the housing bubble price crisis. So, you know, you're looking at that. The Fed has just pumped in. The Fed, the Congress, with these massive deficits and these interest payments, they're just pumping money into the system. And I think a lot of the movement in the currencies with the U.S. dollar weakening is the fact that, you know, places like China are slowly selling off their treasuries.
So yep.
Our treasury, our Fed, who are selling treasuries, with the treasury being, you know, auctioning them, are having to compete with places like China. I mean, a five-year treasury that has 1 year left. So if China bought the five-year treasury 4 years ago and is selling it today, it essentially is a one-year bond. And that one-year bond is competing with a one-year bond the treasury is auctioning off. So I think that explains some of the weaknesses in our currency and the explosion in the stock prices you're talking about. And home prices and Bitcoin. So to me, it's just an inflation story. The Fed and the Congress, the Fed fuels the moral hazards. It creates the moral hazards in Congress where they, with the result of $37 trillion in debt and rising and $1 trillion interest payments. I mean, that's what the Fed does. It's the enabler. It's the guy that, it's the bartender who wants to sell the alcoholic more and more drinks, never cuts them off. That's what the Fed is, in my opinion. And
well,
it's just
the system's filled
with all kinds of inflated money.
They could say you're on your own if you want to spend that money.
I know they're good, but they're not going to say that.
And they seemingly
all these Republicans that are talking about a balanced budget amendment, all they have to do is stop raising the debt limit. I mean, just hey, the debt limit, the debt limit. We're not going to raise the debt limit. And then that would force Congress to run a budget surplus equal to the interest payments. That's all you have to do is just not raise the debt limit. Live within your means. Well, and the Fed could tell Congress, look, we're not going to print any more money. We're not going to buy any more bonds.
Well, I think that you have an awful lot of stuff going on. And the problem, and we was talking a little bit with Carl regarding, you know, the Milton Friedmans of the world, and people will say that a lot of the stuff he said is debunked today. And I'm going to say some of the stuff is absolutely debunked because things have changed, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when he said, I remember somebody asked the question in class, I remember his substance, you know, I don't know why I remember this kind of stuff, but somebody said, what are you worried about national debt? And he goes, national debt doesn't bother me at all. And the guy says, well, how come? And he says, well, because it's like you owning your wife. The house is flat. But now,
yeah, but the problem with that argument is that the married couple, they're married in his model, but they're not married in the economy.
Okay, but what I'm saying, we're also talking
own the debt.
We're talking about 1978.
Yeah.
Or 76. So we just come off World War II in Korea. We're in World War II. People went out, and the people that were making the money, making machines and all kinds of stuff for the turn around and bought government bonds. So it essentially was in-house. Right? So he's absolutely correct. the government owed the money to the people, and after the war, they got paid off, right? Because the taxes went up a little bit, and they paid everybody off. It was not China owning our stuff, not Japan, not Arabs, not anybody. It was for his context, he was absolutely correct, but the context has changed, right?
Well, the people who tend to own bonds and people who don't own bonds, they're not generally married, though.
No, my point is, yeah. it was within the confines of this country.
Point,
yeah, it was in the confines of this country.
There are a group of people that own these bonds, and there are a group of people that don't own these bonds, and they're not related.
I get all that.
They're not married, they're not
family. I get all that, but he's talking about at the time of World War II, we weren't beholden to anybody else that held the debt. Mm-hmm. It was our own people. Same way, when somebody asked him about, front-running orders, he said it's not a problem. Let the industry police itself. But he also, at that time, you saw everybody you traded with. Now you don't. So I would think he'd give a different answer today. Electronically, you can do whatever you want, and nobody knows who the hell you are, right? And the Feds sure not going to find you because they're not looking for you if you're the right person stealing. But they're not going to look for somebody in the White House front-running the order, are they?
I'm kind of thinking the SEC is... They do kind of like what they did during the financial crisis, the recovery from it. That's like a selective persecution, prosecution.
Kind of.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they probably turn their head when it's a friend.
Oh,
I can see them turning their head.
Well, when you
like, it would be nice to know who shorted the market right before 9/11. I don't think they're ever going to release that.
Funny you should mention that because my buddy John Najarian, Dr. J, had just had some guy put together a system. There were always people trying to find out. I'll go back even further. When the old floor was, well, where the new floor is now, which is even more bizarre hell, but I won't go into that. You walked out on the steps. You had to walk down four steps to get on the trading floor, right? This is the option trading floor. If you walked out there, it was small enough. All you had to do was listen, and you could tell the crowds that were busy and which stocks were moving. And you could run right over there and try and trade, or not, or watch, or whatever you want to do. So you could tell everything that was busy because you could hear it.
Yeah.
Well, then as time went by and there's more and more stocks, there was an outfit called Track Data that actually allowed you to do some programming in their system. Not programming, but you could tell their system to do some searches. And you could find, like now there's a gazillion stocks out there. So if I'm sitting there going, okay, how do I know what's trading? I wouldn't know. I mean, I used to know all the stocks by name, and I would go through, how many stocks do we have on the floor that traded worth of crap? Maybe 25? I'd go through every one of them every morning to see if there was any imbalances, and I could buy a 25 volatility and sell a 30, and that's what I did. Neutral spreading is what we did. But now, I have no idea where all the action is, unless somebody helped me. Well, this Track Data allowed you to say, okay, General Motors, for instance, normally does 1,000 options a day, and yesterday they did 5,000. You know, they'd get a standard deviation of what they do every day, and you'd want a thing to give you the list of, 1 and 2 times standard deviation outliers. You know this better than me. But now the problem was, do I know whether they were buying or whether they were selling? You know, we had clients, really big clients at the time, that would do a 10,000, they'd buy 100,000 shares of stock and sell, 1,000 options in a covered right. Well, you didn't know what they were doing on the stock side. So if they sold the calls, you might say, gee, they're bearish. No, they aren't, because they bought the stock. So what Dr. J put together was, and here were his people, he didn't do it, they did something. Not only did it tell you where unusual activity was, it could tell you whether they were taking the offer or selling the bid, whether there was some edge to it. You know, so if the market's a quarter, a half, and a big lot goes up at 3/8, what does it tell you? Nothing, right? Other than somebody had a big size. But if somebody went in and piled in there and bought it at half and then bought it at 5/8, whoever that person is has some sort of a, they've got a hard-on for the thing, for lack of a better term, on the way up or the way down, right? So it gives you some idea of intent. And if you start looking at this day after day, well, before 9/11, John's system, which was very new, started picking up all these unusual put transactions, United Airlines, American Airlines, and all the airlines, and American Express and places like that. And I remember him telling me, what's going on? Why is everybody buying puts in all these airlines? And sure enough, 9/11 happens, And he's on he's on CNBC, and he says, you know, my system picked up all these puts. And the SEC starts calling our office. John was with us at the time. Hey, how'd you know about this stuff? John goes, well, it's right there. And all of a sudden, there's people on TV talking about, you know, and I got a retail brokerage firm. And the guys are going, well, we don't know if we can trace this stuff. Bull crap. You call me up and say, hey, who's your guy that bought the 1,000 puts? Looks Hal Snar. Here's his account number. It's not like it's not there. Or if the money came from overseas, first of all, you better have a string on that money overseas. Now, it's harder now. You don't just have an account from Mickey the Mope in Liechtenstein and not know who the hell he is. You know who he is, or you can't take the account. I mean, who's kidding who? Even though it's worse now. Well, this account is an offshore account, but by the way, the money to pay for the puts came from, was wired in from this bank in London or this bank someplace. You can't tell me you can't find these people. Hell, what a bunch of crap. What a bunch of crap. And they're calling, man, well, how did you get these numbers? Who are these people? This is our SEC. They never caught anybody.
Well, it makes you think that these guys are really gatekeepers.
They didn't want to catch them.
Yeah.
The same. By the way, the same
thing. It just goes back to that what we were talking about earlier about, you know, these corporations and maybe the guys that own these drug cartels, they're lobbying for these policies, you know, convoluted tax code, regulations, because all that cartelizes industries. Right, it creates these monopolies that are created by policy. Right, so they're lobbying for this stuff. They're lobbying for the Rube Goldberg issue. Right, something that should be simple.
Well,
simple isn't simple.
By the way, we have a few minutes,
and only they can navigate these policies and go around the speed limits.
Well, that's
we all have to drive over the speed limits.
Well, I mean the drug situation. I don't know how. I actually have a friend who's, I won't say into drugs, but he got one of the original licenses for the medical marijuana places here in Chicago. And sounds like you got people in the boardroom with you.
Yeah.
But he had one of the original licenses for the medical marijuana. Now, you would think, if you've ever had a prescription, that if you're going to give, you know, Hal antibiotics for a month, you're going to give him a prescription, you're going to go to the pharmacy, and guess what? You're going to get 30 pills, right? There's 30 days in a month. Last time I checked, maybe 31. Well, you don't, for the medical marijuana, you didn't get that. You got a note from your doctor saying that you could buy medical marijuana. You could buy it every damn day. There was no limit.
Yeah.
So, but now that's taxed at the drug rate. So you'd say, why do you need recreational marijuana? Well, now it gets taxed at a much different rate.
Oh, it's in the restaurant.
Yeah. But the it's a totally different rate. Now, there's still a lot of people that are getting the medical stuff and selling it on the street because they're getting it cheaper. So yeah, it's a you know, everything's sort of a scam and a whole mess. And what's the difference between the medical and the recreational? Well, none. But what it means in the recreational, you and I could walk in and buy a bunch of gummies today if we wanted to, or we don't have our marijuana thing. You know, people are going to the medical marijuana distributor right next to Wrigley Field and buying some gummies and going in and buying two less beers, right?
Yes.
I mean, why not? I mean, it's beers are $14. I mean,
Thursday night we're going to the Yankee game, and I'm going to be looking forward to paying for my
$20
beer at the Yankee game.
Actually, the Yankees are nowhere near the top of the price list for beers.
Oh, really?
They're cheaper than Cubs and Sox.
Wow.
In some places, they're only like $4 and $5, like a Coors Field.
Well, last time I went to Yankees game, I think I spent $120. On hot dogs and beers for my in-laws and my future wife. It was crazy.
Well, I think the beers at Cubs Park are like 14. I think the Yankees are like 11 or something. I mean, it's not like they're cheap, but there are some places that are 4 and 5. So, yeah, I mean, you can... Hey, what do you make of... I don't know if you saw this or heard us talk. Oh, you got people.
I'm
Are you your toast?
I'm trying to find a place to... talk.
All right. Well, S&P futures up 3, NASDAQ futures up 45. We've got the interest rates are the problem again today. We're at 4.96. I didn't think we were going to do this 3 days in a row. We're up 0.33. So that's like 2-3% in the last 2-3 days. So something, people are fishy about where these rates are going, but that's not good. I think if we run through 5 on the 30-year, it might cause a few people to pause a little bit. I don't think it's going to be a major deal breaker for the market, but it's a little something. I know if we go to 8, it's a deal breaker for the market, or at least my experience would tell me that. But the stocks that are hot are continuing to be hot. I mean, Oracle's up another 2% today. You can't short any of these things that are going up. I mean, they're just momentum plays. And you go up every day, and people buy them because they're going up. And that's kind of the drill. I mean, so the tariff things today, we're deciding between August 1st and August 9th. So we keep pushing the date back. And every time we push the date back, the market sort of celebrates. And then all of a sudden it goes the other way. So there's an article here today if you want to read what it currently is by Kevin Browninger on CNBC. Trump announces steep tariffs on 14 countries starting August 1st. Now these are Japan, South Korea, Malaysia, Kazakhstan, South Africa, Laos, God knows what we get from Laos, Myanmar, which we talked about, Tunisia, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Indonesia, Bangladesh, Serbia, Cambodia, and Thailand.
I think the Asian countries are, I think the tariffs there might be an effort to prevent China from exporting to them and then re-importing to the United States.
Well, hell, didn't in Trump's first term, didn't he pound up and down it? How many people left China and went to Vietnam and Thailand, and now?
Well, I think what he's trying to do is China will export the goods to, like, say, Vietnam, and then it's kind of an arbitrage, and then it's sent directly without any improvement from Vietnam to the United States. That I'm not trying to defend it; I'm just trying to explain it.
Well, where do you think? I mean, I'm curious as to how this all comes to pass. I mean, we have.
I think what his ultimate goal is he's trying to move the Overton window politically. I think he wants like a 10% universal tariff on every country in the world. And you know, 5 years ago, people would have said that was crazy. So he floats these 40%, 80% tariffs, because I think what he wants to do is just establish a 10% tariff on every nation throughout the world. That's, I think, his ultimate goal.
But I listened to our current president talking on, was it Dick Cavett, like 30 years ago, when all he did was rail about tariffs.
Yeah.
How we needed tariffs. What economic book is he reading where these tariffs are terrific? He seems to have this idea that every time you buy something from somebody overseas, you're getting screwed.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing is, I finished up this history that Rose Wilder Lane wrote, and she basically made the point that the Industrial Revolution was an extension of the American Revolution. And in the United States, steam engines were allowed to, people were allowed to put steam engines on boats and travel up and down rivers and across the Atlantic Ocean. And in European nations, in all Europe, they weren't allowed to do that. The governments were protecting the wooden boat, fabric sail, you know, boatswain's mate, carpenter's mate industry, they're protecting it. And in the United States, we were basically free from all those government regulations and rules, and people were allowed to innovate and disrupt markets. And Americans invented this clipper ship that made it to China and twice as fast, there and back twice as fast. And America, and a lot of ports were closed because all these other nations had these Trump-like tariffs and trade policies, but the United States didn't. And our boats, our clippers, would slide in really quickly, cut through the waves, load their boats up. They could pay higher prices because they could get it to the United States or Europe twice as fast. So they would get all the goods. The British shippers wouldn't get any of the goods because their costs were higher and they couldn't undercut the Americans. The Americans could overbid the British and squeeze them out of trade.
Well, we had big tariffs on British. we had huge tariffs on some textile stuff to basically.
I know what I'm getting at. The British, though, they had these really heavily regulated shipping industries. They were so worried about this that they actually thought about going to war against the United States, but instead they got rid of all their barriers. They opened up their ports. And so the British retook over all that shipping. And the Americans were punished because they had these tariffs in place. The British no longer had these tariffs in place. And they were able to reestablish their dominance on the sea. So I think Trump's reading the history is a problem.
Yeah.
Because our tariffs were still in place. They weren't a problem when we had the fastest ships, when we were disrupting, when we were using steamboats. The British, when they eliminated all their tariffs, all their trade barriers, they were able to retake the seas and retake trade. Because all those tariffs, the American tariffs that were in place, now all of a sudden became a problem.
Well, when you have the ability to make people believe you, even when you don't speak the truth, which
politicians are very gifted at that.
Well, some are more gifted than others.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say that if we went down to the local saloon, maybe not here, it's kind of still where some traders hang out, and interviewed everybody across the board, 90% of them are going to say that the other country is paying the tariffs.
Yeah.
Which, and I just wonder where we're.
I think it depends. It just depends. I mean, if we aggregate, I think you can make those kinds of statements. But if you look at it country to country, the level of competitiveness within the country, if the goods are available at many different places throughout the world, then the exporter has the importer has the advantage over the exporter. But if only one country and one company in that country is selling a product that people need, then it shifts. So it just depends on the product and the number of producers.
Well, every single product has its own story.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you and I know that, but I don't think a whole lot of people know that. Every single product has its own story. And some people, just like our lion piece of whatever, who's our economic advisor, they asked him the other day something about prices going up because of tariffs. And his answer was, we're showing that import prices are already coming down. Okay. Now, that is... Nothing is... As I've gotten older, Hal, I think that telling half the story is a fatter lie than lying in some ways. I am sure that what you're mentioning is some of the import prices as people react to the tariffs and want to remain competitive over here. Some of the pricing getting here might actually be going down.
Yeah.
A little bit. Now, whether it's going down... Now, so the price of a car, a Toyota, it was $40,000. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Toyota didn't lower the price to $38,000 to try and stay competitive. So, but now you're still paying 25% on $38,000, right? So the price to you is still going to be higher, which is the whole which is the whole story, correct?
Yeah, it depends what they mean by how they define price.
How they define import prices? It means the price when it gets to the shore, but the tariff goes on after it gets here, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's the part he's leaving out, which I think is a little...
And the price is falling is not necessarily a good thing, because overall quantity might be falling because demand for the good is being kind of like destroyed. And when demand falls relative to supply, you're going to get lower prices. So it could be the case that maybe GDP is shrinking.
Well,
I think prices rising as a result of supply increase is a great thing. But prices falling as a result of demand being destroyed by, government intervention is a bad thing.
Well, I think, Helen, I'll lob this one out there. We have a few minutes left. We'll talk about it next week maybe. But I think to a certain extent, our entire Constitution has been co-opted to the point where it ain't worth a crap.
Oh, yeah. It's been co-opted for some time.
But, I mean, it's even, only Congress can declare war. Okay, well, Bush declares a war on terrorism. Okay, so we're openly at war till the last guy we define as a terrorist is gone, so we're at war forever, and you can do whatever you want from the executive branch. It's not exactly my read of the Constitution. It says in the Constitution that the Congress defines tariffs. Okay, well then you get some emergency tariff declaration 40 years ago, and this guy decides, okay, everything's an emergency. Well, what's the emergency? I say it's an emergency, and it's an emergency, okay. So now he can do whatever he wants forever.
Well, government can do anything under...
Well, but I'm saying, we used to have a piece of paper...
They can invoke public health.
Yeah, but I'm saying we used to have a piece of paper that set us apart, and now we don't. Because now you can do whatever you want.
I think there's two groups of people in the United States. There are people that want to make us like old Europe, with neo-mercantilism and monopolies granted by government edicts and de facto monopolies created by taxing policies and regulations. And there's a group of people that want the United States to be free. I'm on the side of freedom. I want people to be set free. And when you subsidize certain things, certain behaviors, certain choices, you get moral hazard. And it goes back to the people you were talking about earlier who are smoking all that pot, paying all that money, not working. I mean, that's a result of the moral hazard that it creates, right? And so I want people to be set free. I don't want to be the caged dog of my neighbor.
We're heading in that direction, buddy. We
open up that cage and let that dog out.
We not only have people over time that have be able to become the monopolists, where we have intercepted the free market on every level, but now we have a person in the White House that not only wants to let it happen, he wants to be the monopolist.
All we're going to do is ask the question, what markets are relatively free from government ownership?
Can you
see prices falling and quantity going up?
Can you name 10 industries now that you would consider to be competitive?
I would say like laptops and TVs, electronics, for the most part, are pretty free.
Well, now they're going to have a big tariff on them.
Yeah.
I'm going to say I can get to 5 or 6 pretty easily. I have trouble getting to 10.
Yeah.
I'm going to say oil is very competitive.
You look at food.
Food is very
competitive. There's a couple companies that pretty much control the food supply.
Yeah, but in Chicago, Roderick lives in Orland. You know, I get up early on a Sunday morning and I can go to 5 or 6 different food stores I'm going to say retail food is still competitive. I'm going to say barbers are competitive. I'm going to say beauticians.
I think it's an illusion. There are two major competitors. You only need one competitor to bring prices down and quality go up. But there are basically two big food producers.
Well, you know, hey, I've accused you of being little milty. He would debate you that big time. He thinks a monopoly is actually more beneficial than a cartel. He used to think that.
Well, it depends if it's protected by government.
Well, they sort of are. I mean, it's what did Lou called it? I think we're going to what I call we would call a very fascist system.
Yeah, I call it neo-mercantilism.
Well, but
king grants monopoly power to.
Well, this is Lou's word, not mine. Although I guess it becomes mine if I use it. It's essentially 2 or 3 companies in every industry with their nose up the ass of government.
Yeah.
You know, 4 or 5 banks, all with their nose up the ass of government.
I guarantee they're lobbying for these restrictions.
Yeah,
the
but I mean, look at the defense.
They don't want to prove it's $65. They don't want it at $60.
Well, some industries, like our industry, even though you had your big firms that always were favored, you could get in the business real easy. So you could always, a small firm could pop up and do a nice job, you know, in a month or two. You know, five people could leave the big firms with all their tests and everything, get some money together, get a new firm, and they could be in business in 2 months. Well, now that's virtually impossible to happen.
Yeah.
But I would say, I can name about 7 or 8. Obviously, agriculture, you know, farms and stuff are very competitive. But once you get past that, restaurants and bars, but now.
I think retail's pretty competitive.
Well, but it is and it sort of is and it isn't. I mean, how many of the big boxes have taken over for other people?
Yeah.
I mean, and.
Well, Amazon's got to compete against Walmart, so they can't just jack up prices.
Well, okay, but I'm saying, but Walmart can be their own, monopolist in a lot of areas.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they are and they aren't.
But they're not charging monopoly prices. They're holding prices down. So.
Because
they know that people can go to Amazon. Like, if I need to order some stuff for kids, I go on Amazon and I go on Walmart and I buy half the stuff from Walmart.com and I buy half the stuff from Amazon. And I get pretty good discounts. Like whenever I would need to do oil changes and vehicle maintenance, I'll buy half my auto parts from Amazon and half from Walmart, you know? And that's so that you only really need 2 competitors.
I think you need those guys know what the other guy's charging more than you and I do.
Yeah, but they people can choose, right?
They're not
and they can't.
Don't think for a second that they that the reason why they have to keep their shirt buttoned is their heart is popping out of their chest.
Well, I'm telling you, if you have a public school and they have to compete against a private school across the street, and that private school has a great program for poor people, that's going to discipline the public school, because parents will pull their kids out of that private school.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree. I'm saying, but anyway, so how long are you hanging in New York?
I'll be here probably until Friday.
All right, bud. Well, be careful on the subway. Careful you don't get on the wrong one.
The subway's pretty empty at night. Yeah. I mean, the morning.
All right, bud. SP Futures up 7. NASDAQ Futures up 63. We'll see if we can maintain this rally after yesterday's decline, and when interest rates going back up again. Normally, I'd say we would, but we will find out. Hal, take care of yourself. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.